Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Feel Good Friday, episode 73, to be a little bit more specific. That's right, episode 73, FGFEP 73, LFG, baby. Let's fucking go. Let's do this. I'm happy today for multiple reasons. Not only do I have a very special guest on, Boston comic Joe Fenty, very funny guy, definitely going to want to stick around for that interview. It's a good time. He's funny, he's cool, he's all that, and just a good guy. Just a good guy. He's taking the time to do this for me, and it's not easy. The dude's got over 150,000 followers on Instagram. 157,000. 157K, to be exact, to give you a little more specific of a number. There you have it. So he took the time out to be on, and I really, really do appreciate that. Good guy, Joe Fenty. Great name, Joe. It's a hell of a name. I got a job and my name's Joe Luke Combs. Anyway, I'm singing. Why am I singing? I'm excited. Fuck you. Before I get to the interview of one Joe Fenty, I have some other good news as well. And it's about Creed. And it's not the movies. Not Creed 1, not Creed 2, not Creed 3. No, fuck that. Those are fine movies. I have no issue. I have no quarrel with those movies. But this is about the best Creed. The best Creed out there. The band, Creed. The band that released Human Clay in 1999 and Weathered in 2001. Two of the best albums of my childhood. I loved Creed growing up. I fucking loved Creed growing up. I got Human Clay in 1999. I would listen to Higher and With Arms Wide Open and Are You Ready and What If. There's a line in the song What If. What If is one of the harder ones that Creed does. That album rocks. There's a joke in there because that album rocks. It's called Human Clay, and you know, you make bricks from clay, and bricks are kind of like, you know, shaped rocks, and I am going to stop talking about that. But that song What If, there's a line where he says something about your axe cuts the roots that feed them. And growing up, I always thought he said your ass, and I was like, this is badass. He just said the A word, and I would just listen to that song all the time, and I would be like, I can't let my mom hear that I'm listening to this, because Scott Stapp just said ass, and if she finds out that I'm listening to that smut, then she'll take that right away. And I didn't want her to take it away, because I love that album. Obviously, With Arms Wide Open and Higher are two jams, two ultimate jams of my childhood. And then Weathered was even better. Some would say that Weathered was a better album than Human Clay. Weathered had Bullets was the song they kicked things off with, which again was a banger. Freedom Fighter was a song they had on there. Those are two of the, again, the harder Creed hard rock. But then they also had My Sacrifice and One Last Breath. Which, again, two fucking jams from Creed. I grew up loving Creed, and I didn't know that there was Creed hate out there until I was older. So to me, Creed was always just this badass rock band. Grew up and found out that people hated on Creed, and you know what? Fuck them, dude. What did Creed do to you? Except they just spread their Creed seed all over your stereo system and your TV. They gave one of the most iconic performances at a football game ever. It was the Thanksgiving game in 2001, I think November 22nd, 2001. Yeah, I know the date, baby. I know the date. I got excited when I heard about the Creed reunion. So I looked up some old clips, and obviously the Thanksgiving Day performance came up. It was Dallas Cowboys. They always play on Thanksgiving. It's always the Cowboys and the Lions. So it was the Dallas Cowboys against the Denver Broncos. This is a big game. Big game. It's Thanksgiving. So first off, everyone's watching. Because what else are you going to do on Thanksgiving? What, are you going to talk to your family? Are you fucking nuts? No. You watch football. So there's that going on. And then it's the Dallas Cowboys, who are always relevant, even though they've been a staple of mediocrity ever since the 80s and 90s. Or like the 2000s have been. Like, if the Cowboys weren't the Cowboys, if they didn't have the reputation of being America's team, then they would be irrelevant. But they're relevant because they're the Cowboys. They are America's team. So let's see if Dakota Prescott can do anything for him. But and then the Denver Broncos, who they're riding the L way high at the time in 2001, and you know, they're not so much relevant anymore. The Chiefs have taken over the AFC West. Ever since the Manning era, the Broncos have been meh. Russell Wilson was supposed to come in and be the savior. That was one of the worst things I've ever witnessed. But maybe Sean Payton can turn it all around. We'll see. That's a high hill to climb. You're in the AFC West. You're with the Chiefs and the Chargers. And best of luck to you, Denver. But anyway, back in the day, the Broncos were super relevant. So Broncos Cowboys, big game. Halftime performance, who is it? Motherfucking Creed. Let's go. They're performing all their hits. They got Scott Stapp in the white Dallas Cowboys jersey with his long hair flowing. He's looking fucking dope. And then they have the dude, the aerialist is what they're called, aerialists. It's these shirtless guys that had these big fucking white tarp cloth things tucked under their arms, and they would run around and then jump in the air, and then they would go flying. They were just flying all around Cowboys Stadium looking like angels. It was majestic. It was magical. It was entrancing. It was awe-inspiring. It was great. It was a great performance. It was one of the best performances I've ever seen. And that last one was a bit much, but it was still awesome. I think it was one of the biggest performances in NFL history, in my opinion. When people talk about NFL performances, the first thought is the Super Bowl. And there have been some great Super Bowl performances, don't get me wrong. But performances in general, I don't know. Creed in 2001, Thanksgiving Day. Let's do it. That's got to be up there for me. Chris Stapleton's rendition of the National Anthem this past Super Bowl was also really awesome. I actually put that on my country playlist when Spotify released it. And I played it all day during the 4th of July. It gets me emotional. But anyway, so Creed is back. Creed is reuniting. It's been 12 years, a little over 12 years since their last show that they did together. But they're back, and they're going to be on a cruise. They're doing a show on a cruise called the Summer of 99. So that's appropriate because 99 was arguably when they were at their biggest. That, you know, 98 through 2002, those are... That's a little time period where Creed is huge. Creed is the thing. And then the hate came in. It's like the hate on Nickelback or Limp Bizkit or, like, fuck you, dude. Like, they make solid music, but for whatever reason, it became cool to hate on them. Yeah, it's not deep or poetic or anything like that, but it doesn't have to be. They make solid music. They make jams. So I'm not bringing this up during the interview, because I'm not sure if Joe is actually into Creed, so I don't want to like be like, did you hear Creed's reuniting for another show? And have him be like, that's great, man. Good for you. I'm glad you're like, you know, so I'm avoiding any potential awkwardness and bringing it up now. And, you know, Joe, if you're listening to this and you hear this intro and you are into Creed, then I'm sorry I didn't bring it up. And we couldn't share that, but you know, it's not easy to find Creed. You know, I work at TJ's. I work at the Joe of the Trader Joe's, if you will. And it's a bit of the age range of employees there is pretty huge. It's everything from 16 to fucking 75 or something like that. It's big. And the teenagers are usually, like the high schoolers are usually the baggers. And I'll ask them, I'll be like, hey, do you know Creed? And they'll say no, and Limp Bizkit, and no. And it's heartbreaking that they don't know who these groups are. It's disappointing. It's heartbreaking. And it's not a world I want to live in. But alas, here we are, and I'm spreading the good word that Creed is reuniting. So finally, some good news for a concert. It's been all farewell tours and shit. Here comes Creed to make my day, as they always do. They never fail. Old Reliable. Old Reliable. My buddy Paul actually went to one of their concerts. He said it's a top five concert for him that he's ever been to. So no biggie. I don't know how many of the concerts he's been to he actually remembers. because he has a tendency to get inebriated at events like that. But top five, which is cool. I don't know how many concerts he's been to. I wonder if it's five. That'd be wild if it was like four. And then he was like, yeah, Creed's top five. But anyway. All right. I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to stop blabbering. Just excited to share that news. Brought me back for a little bit. Got to do a deep dive down the Creed rabbit hole. And I enjoyed it. But after this interview coming up, you're going to do a deep dive down Joe Fenty's Instagram and TikTok and Twitter and whatnot, because he's really funny and really cool and creates great stuff. And yeah, coming up next, Joe Fenty. Let's do it. Play that intro music. Let's go. All right, everybody. Welcome back to episode 73 of Feel Good Friday. I have a very, very special guest on. Stand-up comedian, content creator, just all around funny, funny guy, Joe Fenty. Joe, thank you for doing this. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me, pal.
Yeah. Great, great name, by the way, Joe.
Oh, right back at you.
Yeah. So, I guess, to get right into it, I saw one of your clips. I Instagram, the reels pop up all the time. And then I learned that you were into stand-up. That was a pleasant surprise, because I could tell you were really funny, and I was I like it when, you know, funny people do stand-up. I feel like they should spread that gift. You know, if they have it, if they can entertain people, they should do it. So I guess, when did stand-up start for you? Was it the content first, or was it stand-up first?
So the first time I ever did stand-up was in my third grade talent show. I literally, like, memorized all of Brian Regan's old stuff.
Nice.
And recited it in front of the class because I just thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
So I'd always, and like, once Netflix came out, they had the Comedy Central Presents 30-minute stand-up specials, and they had like 218 of them.
Yeah.
So I was ripping stand-up or watching it, consuming it, breathing it ever since I was a kid, and it had always been a fascination of mine. I did two open mics right before the pandemic hit. Thought this was pretty fun. Pandemic hit, I stopped. Then I started making content in like March of 21, and I realized that it was great, but that itch for stand-up was still always there.
Yeah.
So then I did another open mic. I tried to pitch myself the clubs and be like, hey, I have this following, can you book me? And like, obviously that's not how it works. People want to see you do the thing they're booking you to do.
Right.
So I hosted a comedy show in my apartment with my roommate. Like, we had a pregame of 30 of our friends, whatever, and in the middle we stopped the party and said, all right, Joe and Connor are doing stand-up, like, go watch.
Nice.
So I recorded that and started sending that around to show people, like, hey, I can do this. I'm not just a TikTok, Instagram guy. And then I started booking gigs from there, and now I try to do a show or a mic anywhere from 2 to 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I clicked on the link tree or whatever on your Instagram profile. You got a lot of dates coming up, yeah?
Yeah. July has been a bit of a comedy bender, which is awesome. Like,
yeah.
Even this week, I did 5 shows over 5 days. So, really just getting up there is the most important thing, not only for getting better, but for also getting that itch off your back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I try to go up as much as possible. If someone gives me a date, I'm going to try to make it work.
Definitely. Now, you mentioned Brian Regan. Who were some of your other inspirations growing up? I know my favorite set of videos, possibly my favorite set of videos from you is the jokes that would be better if Mitch Hedberg said them. So I'm assuming Mitch Hedberg was possibly an inspiration, but who else is on that list for you?
Yeah, I mean, Mitch Hedberg is probably my favorite comedian of all time. Yeah. I just love non sequiturs and things that are just observations of the mundane.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a masterclass in delivery. Like, what he says is kind of humorous, but then you add that Mitch twang to it, and yeah, it's just a full belly laugh of a joke. So,
yeah.
Mitch Hedberg's definitely like inspiration number one. Dimitri Martin is probably another big inspiration of mine because he takes that same looking at the mundane and finding ways to make it funny. And I love humor that's just available and accessible to everyone because I think comedy's more fun that way. So when you can make jokes about the pure linguistics of talking about the roof of your mouth versus the, like, the ceiling of your mouth, I just think that's awesome. I love Jim Gaffigan, again, another relatively clean comic who just jokes about life and fun. I mean, there's so many people I like and so many people I appreciate, but I guess the current comedians that are really, that really just get me pumped anytime they have something new come out is Tom Segura, Nate Bargatze, Nikki Glaser. Comedians, I mean, there's so many, but yeah, that I could go on forever, but that's probably the short list of people I'm watching and still watch.
Mitch Hedberg, same boat. One of my favorites growing up. Mitch It All Together was one of the first albums I ever bought. And I kind of wonder, because comedians like Mitch Hedberg, Patrice O'Neill, Greg Giraldo, they all passed away before podcasts really blew up. I feel like Mitch Hedberg would not be in the podcast game because his comedy was so, it's just these one-liners, you know? He wasn't more, I didn't really see him as like a conversation guy. But are there any comedians that are passed away now that you would have loved to have seen in this day and age, like material about everything going on in the world?
I don't know. I mean, I have such a limited view because I only watch people that have been on TV for me, so I don't know a lot of the greats that came before.
Yeah.
Obviously, Mitch is my number one in terms of people I wish I could have seen perform, but I really don't know that much about the time that precedes me. I should do some research and read up on it, but there's so much that you got to consume now to stay current and up to date that it's almost impossible to be aware of who's in the scene right now, but also where they came from.
Yeah, definitely. When did you, the idea, and I'm still harping on about Mitch Hedberg, but I mean, he's, you know, he's on my Mount Rushmore. I know that. When did you come up with the idea that, like, when you were writing these jokes, like, oh yeah, if Mitch Hedberg said this, it would sound a lot. Like, where did that idea come from? Were you just saying it in your head and you were like doing it in his voice?
It came from college. My senior year, my then girlfriend and I really liked Mitch Hedberg, and I would just say everything in his tone of voice to get a laugh out of her.
Yeah.
And then I started writing jokes in that voice to actually have new ones to share, because we watched all of his compilations and would quote it back and forth, but my next exercise was, all right, I'm going to write jokes that Mitch never said. And then I revisited that old notes app whenever I started that series, and I thought, oh, this could work, because I can kind of do his impression. I have the sunglasses, and I get his cadence, might as well. And I thought it would just be such a great homage to him to say, hey, this is something that really inspired me to do comedy and something that I really love about comedy, so might as well give it a shot. And it gets mixed reviews. It gets really, really polarized responses. Some people say it's great and they love what I'm doing, and other people are like, don't compare your jokes to Mitch's. I'm like, shut up, dude. Like, we're having fun here. I'm not doing it to steal his thunder. I literally announce at the beginning of every video, here are jokes that would have been better if Mitch Hedberg said them.
Right.
Like, I'm clearly saying it, like, this would be a great Mitch joke. I do the impression, and by no means am I saying my jokes are funnier. I'm actually saying the opposite. They would be better if Mitch said them. They would be funnier if Mitch said them.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure I saw a video where you were talking about a guy that was complaining to you that you had stolen a Mitch Hedberg joke, but he had actually seen it on one of your videos that was jokes that would be better if Mitch Hedberg said them. Was that right, or am I imagining that?
Yeah, that happened. Some guy commented, because I, in one of my videos, I or one of my stand-up clips, I talk about my bomb, boom, boom, uh-oh joke.
Right.
And he says, you stole that joke from Mitch Hedberg, word for word, pound for pound, bar for bar.
Yeah.
And I go, because I wrote it.
Oh, that's funny.
And then he commented, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I realized that you did write this in your Mitch Hedberg series. I apologize. I'm like, that's actually such a compliment that you think that it was a true Mitch Hedberg joke. Like, then yeah. I did my job.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I don't know if it's just your impression of him or if it is the jokes themselves, but there are a lot of those jokes that I'm genuinely surprised are not Mitch Hedberg's jokes. I think my favorite was the cheesy bread one, where you were like, he just fucked up making pizza, said, fuck it, cheesy bread. I love that.
Yeah, and what makes it fun about that series is obviously I have his textbook of jokes. Like, that one sounds so close to his Pringles one. So at least gives me a base. And then I have to find, all right, where are other areas that are silly? Like, why do people like cheesy bread? It's just pizza without sauce.
Yeah.
Some people even dunk cheesy sticks in or cheesy bread into sauce. Like, that's just deconstructed pizza. And that from there, I thought, all right, Mitch would have had something to say about this.
Yeah.
And then you wrap it all up and put it in his presentation, and there you go.
That's awesome. So speaking of cheesy bread and food, not necessarily cheesy bread, but food, you recently came out with the, day whatever after watching The Bear, which I'm a big The Bear fan. Being from Chicago, I've been to shops like that. I get it. It's really hectic. If there was a show like that in Boston, what would the restaurant be serving? Would it be, I don't know exactly. I don't want to say something wrong. But
I mean, there's so many different pockets. Like, you could get a really fun diner for breakfast.
Yeah.
Where you have, like, Boston, I don't know if this is just everywhere, but at least what I've noticed, there are so many diners around here that just have adorable 70-year-old, 80-year-old women as the waitresses and hosts.
We got one of those, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, they got a little bit of a wisecrack attitude to them, so, like, they'll bust your balls a little bit, and it just makes it fun. So it could be that. It could be something in, we have the North End here, which is our, like, Italian district.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of Italian restaurants, bakeries, whatever you name it. You got it there. So there's, that could be a different vibe than your, you know, older diner. So I'm not sure what the Boston equivalent of The Bear would be, but I hope they would cast me as one of the characters.
Yeah. You do a great Boston accent. And, I know you do it in some of your videos, the one where you're doing all the different, the red line and the green line, them as people or whatever. I want to talk about your impressions in general, because obviously there's the Mitch Hedberg, and I know you've done John Mulaney and Patrick Warburton and all that. Do you have a favorite impression, like a go-to, when people are like, oh, you do impressions, what's your best one, in your opinion?
My favorite one is Jason Bateman, because it's so understated, and some people don't know Jason Bateman's name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone should know who he is when they see him, but a lot of people just don't put the two and two together.
Yeah.
So when I start doing the impression, like, oh my God, the Arrested Development guy, I'm like, yeah, it's him. So that's maybe the one I love the most, but the one I think I'm best at is either Kronk or the Hormone Monster from Big Mouth.
Yeah.
It's that deep, guttural voice, and it's just a fun one to do.
Uh-huh.
And they're very similar. It's, you change the cadence a little bit and where the pauses are, but I think impressions are such a fun thing to do, and I'm trying to find more. Like, I sound like an insane person in the shower just practicing, but that's what you have to do and see what works.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. I'll watch a Bill Hader clip or Dan Soder, and they're just so good at so many voices, and I would love that as a party trick, you know, to just be able to whip that out. I could do Christopher Walken, but it's like, that's so everyone does Christopher Walken, you know, I want unique ones. So,
I've also realized it's such a fun thing to sneak into my stand-up.
Yeah.
Like, if I do a hypothetical conversation or just doing something where guys in Boston will say this to me, if I just add a different voice, it adds like another layer to the set.
Yeah.
Because when I started doing comedy, I never brought in my impressions. And now I do a stupid bit where a literal eggplant is talking to its son, and I just gave them silly voices, and it made it way better.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I love that. Always improving, you know? That's good.
And that's really the art of stand-up, is a joke is never done.
Right.
You can simplify it, you can sharpen it, you can update it even. So you might have one that's great, but there's always room to make it a little different and a little better.
Yeah, definitely. I know on your the main account of yours that I follow is the Instagram page. It's mostly like content, like TikTok, staged videos, I guess is the word.
Yeah.
Are you going to try to, as time goes on, put more and more stand-up clips out there? Because the first one I saw was the, you were at like a, it looked like a bonfire almost. And you did the bomb airport joke, which, I mean, it's, I feel like those words are so walking on eggshells. Like, I don't even know if I'm saying them right now. The government's listening. But, are you going to be doing more of those anytime soon?
Yeah, so I try to record all of my stand-up sets just for my own improvement. Like, mm-hmm. I love to watch them and see what I'm doing well, what I'm not doing well, how I can improve.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of it recorded. The thing is, I don't want to burn all of my jokes, meaning, like, I don't want to put them on the internet, have people come to my shows, and then know all the jokes I'm going to say.
I got you.
Because it takes a long time to write a good one that fits in and gets consistent laughs.
Yeah.
So obviously I want people to know me for my efforts and my achievements in comedy and performance comedy specifically, but I don't want to alienate the people actually seeing my stuff live.
Mm-hmm.
If they follow me and then see, oh, he's doing all of the jokes he's posted before.
Yeah.
So I want to strike a good balance. I want to come up with more jokes. I see the trend in online stand-up is to post clips of you doing crowd work, because that will never happen again. But yeah. I don't like doing crowd work.
Yeah,
I'm very bad at it, and I don't think it's as funny as the stuff that, like, I don't think if I did crowd work that it would be funnier than the stuff I've scripted.
Yeah,
there are some comedians who are fantastic at crowd work, and it's very hilarious, but I don't think I'm anywhere close to doing it, clipping it, and then posting it.
I got you. Well, now that we're back on comedians, I know I talked to you about this before. Your Mount Rushmore of comedians, I am excited to hear it. I love hearing. I feel like it's not a segment of mine. Like, it's not like part of my take where I do it every episode. It's just such a fun little game, I guess, is hearing people's Mount Rushmores of certain things. So what is your Mount Rushmore of comedians?
I can't imagine this is any surprise, but Mitch Hedberg is on there.
What?
For all the reasons I've listed, I love him. Yeah. Same with Dimitri Martin.
Okay.
Like, I try to read every book by comedians I can get my hands on, so mm-hmm. I have three of Dimitri Martin's books.
Oh, wow.
They're just as good as his stand-up. One and a half of them are just his drawings.
Yeah.
So, technically reading
one
and a half of his books, but, I try to consume everything that people put out. It's so hard to say I like this person more than another, because you like different comedians for different reasons.
Right.
And people's tastes aren't identical. There are people who absolutely love someone like Ron White, who's more crass and blue collar, and he's incredible. But there's some people that just, he's going to rub them the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say, here's the best four comedians ever, which is why I think it's so weird that there are comedy competitions, because how do you say one is better than the other? I've done shows with Boston comedians here who absolutely crushed one day mm-hmm. and then bombed the next with the same exact material, and I noticed the same of myself.
Yeah.
So it's so dependent on who's receiving it.
I got you.
All that aside, Mitch Hedberg, Dimitri Martin.
Okay.
I love Mike Birbiglia.
Oh,
I love his shtick so much.
Yeah.
His book and special Sleepwalk With Me was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I like when they take one giant story, interweave jokes throughout the whole thing, and then tie a ribbon on it at the end. Like, Mike is such a masterclass in doing that.
Yeah.
And then Michael Che, his Matters special,
mm-hmm.
pound pound for pound might be one of the best specials I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's so poignant and funny and different.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't recommend a comedy special more to anyone who's never seen stand-up. It's like, go watch that one first. You'll get why a lot of people obsess over this. So nice. I wouldn't say like they're 100% in my Mount Rushmore, but they're four comedians I really love and really just can't get enough of.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. That is a solid list, in my opinion. Mike Birbiglia, Dimitri Martin, Mitch Hedberg, I grew up watching all of them, so watching, listening, whatever I can. What I want. So now transitioning back to your videos. There's several that I wanted to touch on. I guess my favorite one, this is for sure my favorite set of videos, is the making up corporate expressions.
Yes.
I think it's clever, and it's the way you explain it with like the Nintendo music in the background, like,
yeah.
They're just really fun to watch, and I'm jonesing for more of those. I want
to. It's a hard series to keep going because some people DM me their ideas and they're great,
yeah,
but they're not silly, so yeah. They could be new expressions, but they're not going to catch your eye, and that's what I have to tell these very nice people who DM me saying, "I got a new one for you. What about this?" I'm like, that's actually too good for what I'm doing.
That's like, fair.
The example I always give is, are we giving the Amish a Tesla with this one?
Yeah.
Because it's silly, it could work, and you kind of know what it means already, but once I explain it, you go, oh, that actually does make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't be so obvious, it has to be silly, and like I've noticed, it's not a surefire hit every time I do that series. The first four all went pretty viral, but the fifth edition just didn't hit right. I'm like, yeah. Okay, let's sit back and evaluate here. What did I do wrong there? How did I, you know, how did I not improve going forward?
Right.
So it's a very fun series to do, but I take that one very seriously. Ones that require a lot of writing and planning, I want to make sure I'm not just pumping those out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, is that it is funny, but it's also, they're really good. Like, you could use those expressions. Like, I'd use the "looks like dad finally came home with the milk." I use that all the time now. I love that. Whenever, like, we have a guy at work that he calls off a lot. And yeah. Whenever he shows up, I'm saying that expression. Like, I love it. So, that's how I've spread the word about you at my workplace. But,
there would be no greater satisfaction if I heard that phrase on like a TV show or a podcast or something, and I can point to it and go, I came up with that, and I have the video evidence that I did.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, a lot of people DMing you their suggestions, and I know I DM'd you to be on this podcast, and I'll be honest, I was not expecting a response. You got over 150,000 followers on Instagram. Normally, if it's anything over 100, I don't expect a response. So it was a long shot. Do you go through all your messages and try to respond to each one?
I go through all my comments, all my DMs, because I'm not anything special. I'm not anything important. So I want to give people time if they want to give me theirs.
Yeah.
So, like, you had a very nice message. You're like, hey, man, I really love your stand-up, really love your stuff, would love to interview you. I'm like, absolutely, I'm down. But there are ones that are very crass and mean and gross and rude.
Oh, so you get hate mail?
I don't respond to those, but I try to, you know, engage with the people who want to engage with me because I think it's more fun that way. And there are people who, like, I've met people through all this internet stuff, and I think it's weird that social media is actually being used for what it was created for, in my case, where I'm actually meeting people who have a similar interest as me with stand-up or whatever. So it's I think it's important for me to just make sure I'm reading all my messages, and if they're nice and polite or kind or well-spirited, to, you know, give them a thoughtful response back.
Yeah, definitely. I was stoked when I got the response from you, and I am even more stoked to be doing this. So thank you again. Another set of videos, the college ones, where you're doing the Honest College slogan. What college did you go to, by the way? I know you have so many of those, and I wasn't sure where you actually
went. Yeah, that's fair. I went to Boston College, okay. Which was the very first college I made fun of in the series.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Do you reach out to people that have gone to these colleges and, you know, ask for, like, what would be a good slogan for this? Or do you just come up with it on your own? Like, how did you come up with all those slogans? Because from what I could tell, it's from the colleges that I do know from those lists, like, it's accurate and it's funny. So how did you find all that out, or how did you come up with that?
Yeah, so the ones that came to me early, they were schools that I interacted with or have great friends who went there, or siblings, cousins, whatever. So I knew enough about it, and once I extended all of those, I started thinking about, okay, what have I heard about some of these other colleges? Like, I never knew anyone who went to UChicago. I've mm-hmm. never visited UChicago. But there's that old saying, where fun goes to die. And I thought, okay, how do I change this to make it more of my own? Because everyone knows UChicago, where fun goes to die, to be true. Mm-hmm. But how do I say this in a new way? How do I say this in a more funny way? And I always thought the expression work hard, play hard was stupid. So I thought, all right, how do I joke on that and also joke on UChicago? Because they are a great school.
Yeah.
So I did UChicago, work hard, play hard, but we don't play hard. Yeah. And people recognize it to be true because I'm saying, like, where fun goes to die. I'm also giving them credit for being a smart place because you do work hard there.
Right.
And it's quick and digestible. So what I do now that I'm on part 15 of that series.
I was going to say,
notebook.
Yeah.
I have my joke notebook. I have a bunch of schools written down that I want to do, that I know of,
yeah.
where I think I could make something, but it's just a matter of looking at it every few days and seeing, like, okay, have I thought of anything for Clemson? No? All right. And sometimes it's just a matter of Googling the school, seeing what programs they have, seeing what alumni went there,
mm-hmm.
and giving it a shot. Like Vassar College, I knew nothing about them.
Right.
But then I looked up, saw they didn't have frats, had a bunch of arts and sciences, and had a ton of alumni in the, like, acting and musical space. Like, Justin Long went there. So
yeah.
I thought, all right, if they don't have frats and they're known for their arts and they have, like, 80 a cappella groups, that's the joke.
Yeah.
And then you get it down and go, Vassar College, we don't have Greek life. But we do have a cappella.
I love that. I went to Northern Illinois University, and honestly, there's not a lot there. I'd have to do something with cornfields and mediocre sports.
And that's the other thing. You have to find a way to make them unique to the individual school.
Right.
Because I did one, I think in, like, part 8 or part 9, where they were a little generic. And someone called me out on it, like, this could have applied to any college. And I was like, all right,
yeah.
I'm going to be better. And then the next one, I really dug in, like, oh, it was part 8 into part 9. Because part 9, I did all the schools that were in the Final Four
okay.
that week.
Oh, and yeah, San Diego State and all that, yeah.
Yeah, so for UMiami, I said, like, you thought Minnesota was the Twin Capital? Take a look at our women's basketball team. Like, there was no other school that could say this.
Right. That's awesome. I love that. So while we're on the topic of colleges, I noticed you're a big sports fan. You have several videos where you're wearing your Red Sox jersey or Celtics jersey. But college college sports versus professional sports. Which one do you enjoy more?
Depends on the sport.
Okay.
Like, both are great for their own merits, but I think college football is way more fun to watch just because those kids live and breathe football.
Mm-hmm.
It's their life. And I think it's a little grittier because they're just more prone to choking, which is the most fun part about watching a sport, is watching the number one team go down to like Alabama, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. What a great game.
Yeah.
And the whole time you're like, can they do it? Can Tennessee do it? So I would say college football is more enjoyable than – I love them both, but I have more fun watching college football than I do NFL. But I have more fun watching the NBA than college basketball.
Yeah.
Just because the most fun part of basketball is the scoring, is the dunking, and you just get more of that in the NBA.
Right. It's also a lot neater. And, yeah, I mean, March Madness obviously is one of the greatest things ever. But
oh, of course.
There's a lot of slappy play. Yeah.
But if you're saying, do you want to go watch, like, A-State play Duke, or do you want to watch the Warriors play the Nuggets? I'm like, I'll take the Warriors Nuggets.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So, Boston sports fan, talking to a Chicago sports fan right now, kind of polar opposite, and like obviously both big sports cities, but I think we in Chicago have suffered quite a bit, and I feel like Boston always has a team that's competing. If it's not all of them, there's at least one of them. And I know it was, you know, there haven't been any championships in like the last 4 years, but still,
yeah,
that's like
a long time for us.
Yeah, I know that's a drought for you guys. So what do you think, who out of the four major sports teams in Boston, who's the next to win a championship?
If the Celtics can figure it out, hopefully them. Because
mm-hmm.
I think the Bruins this year was an absolute fluke that we were as dominant as we were, which maybe is proven in our just playoff implosion.
Yeah.
But I hope it would be the Celtics. Like, we have such great talent. We have such a well-oiled machine.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't come together. I think JT going down with that ankle in Game 7 of the Heat series was really what did us in. Like, we didn't have our superstar at his best.
Yeah.
So, if we get the same squad, relatively, like, I know we got Kristaps now and no Smart, RIP, but hopefully with that addition and that shakeup that something could happen there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I don't know if you do. I listen to the Bill Simmons podcast a lot, and he says it all the time that he's not being a homer, but like you could tell when he talks, like he always has his Boston teams like better, like ranked better than they should be. He was sad about the Marcus Smart thing. He knew it was for the best because you guys got Porzingis in return, who's coming off probably his best season. But apparently the people of Boston loved their Marcus Smart.
So. Because he was gritty and he knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also loved watching him from when he started on the team. He was just jacking up so many unwarranted threes and would brick so many of them. And then to watch him become an actual lethal three-point shooter was so much fun.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, it was one of my summers in college where I was still living off campus with my buddies. And anytime Marcus would shoot, we would chant Brickus because we thought he was going to clang it.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, 2020, Brickus was swishes and just cashing them.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Now, your Patriots, do you think they have a chance to compete? Because they're saying AFC East is going to be, like, arguably the best division in football. Do you think they have a chance to compete for the division title? Or, because you guys... What's that?
The homer in me is saying yes, but the realist in me is like, no chance. I think Vegas has us at like a 2% or maybe 0.2% chance to win the AFC East.
Yeah. Damn.
So I'm not confident at all. I don't know what's going on with Mac Jones. How did he go from such a great rookie year to such a garbage year last year?
Yeah.
Maybe he can figure it out.
Yeah.
But it's... I was underwhelmed. Like he looked so promising, especially out of that quarterback class where four of the five of them just didn't do anything their rookie season.
Right.
And then he just reverted right back to the norm. He was no better than Zach Wilson last year.
Oof. That's got to be tough to say.
Yeah. I mean, that's why they brought Aaron Rodgers there.
Like, yeah.
Like, this kid can't throw it.
True. True. And then We'll talk about the Red Sox real quick. Actually, saw you were at the All-Star game in the Home Run Derby. How did you get that hookup? Or obviously,
yeah. One of my partners, Sage, they're a partner with the MLB, and I had done a video for them in the past about the opening day.
Yeah.
And it went well, so they invited me to do basically the same thing, but at the All-Star game. So they asked if I was free that week, and I'm like, what do you mean? They go, we want to fly out to Seattle. I go, I'll make myself free.
Absolutely.
So I took a week off work, flew out there, Monday to Wednesday, quick trip. But yeah, I had such a good time. Like,
yeah.
The Home Run Derby was incredible. You know, the kid in the Mariners hitting 41 home runs in the first round was electric to watch in T-Mobile Park. Like,
right.
You kidding me? So, all around great energy, and just, I would say, out of the big four sports, baseball is probably the one I'm least involved in.
Okay.
But you put me in a stadium, you put me in a ballpark, I'll figure out a way to be a fan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to comment on the Red Sox because I'm a White Sox fan, and
I'm so sorry.
No, it's all right. I'll be okay. 2005 was only 18 years ago. So I'm holding on to it. But we are the AL Central. The Twins are in first place, and they are under 500. The Red Sox would be well and ahead in first place if they were in our division. Do you think there should be a change in playoff format where it's like just the best teams from each conference get in instead of just, you know, winners of the division? Or, because I feel like that is, it's almost unfair to even to the Yankees who, you know, saying it's unfair to the Yankees almost seems like an oxymoron. But do you think there should be a change in rules in that aspect? And not just baseball, just for any sport as well. Should it be the best teams?
I mean, it's, I don't really understand the whole point of, like, would it make sense to just say, all right, here's 30 teams, you all play each other three times, our season is 87 games, figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, maybe. That might be a good way to do it. And then you just put the top, whatever, 16 teams in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes sense. It'd probably be a logistical nightmare to get that working in terms of travel and flights and everything. But
right.
It does seem silly that, you know, one team is playing different teams more times. But I guess, in the end, the best team's ideally going to come out on top.
Yeah.
You know, like, do we really think that a team that's barely over 500 is consistently in a 7-game series going to beat someone who's like, I don't know, whatever.
Right.
Has 100 wins under their belts in the baseball season? No chance.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it all evens out in the end. There's probably a more equitable way to do it for those early rounds of the playoffs, but
right.
The best teams are going to be the best teams.
True. True. Well, I just got the notification. We got about 2 minutes left. So, again, I wanted to thank you for doing this. I appreciate it more than you know. I'm a genuine fan of yours. Your content is great. It's hilarious. And I am looking forward to more stand-up as well. I know you said you got a lot of dates coming up. Was there anything you wanted to plug before we wrap this up?
Let's see here. Yeah, I'm doing a charity stand-up show on Tuesday, August 1st at Dorchester Brewing.
Okay.
That it's supporting Team Impact. One of my friends is running the Chicago Marathon, and it's just going to be a great fundraiser, great time. We've got, I think, 8 of, you know, some of the best Boston comedians that I could find and who are available. So it should be a fun night. Money's going to a great cause, and you get to see me host and do some stand-up. So that's really the only thing to plug. Otherwise, follow me on all my stuff, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube Shorts, and Thread/Twitter, whatever you use for quick jokes. So I'm there too.
Got you. All right. Well, Joe, thank you so much. This has been awesome. And I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on, pal. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, man. Have a good one, all right?
You too.
All right, everybody, that was Joe Fenty. You could find him on Instagram, Chicken Fried Fenty, I believe, which I didn't even ask for the origin story of that. Kind of wish I did. It might be a little regret of mine, but it's okay. Maybe we'll get him on the next one. I also didn't ask, you know, if there was a bit about his name, you know, if he ever got coffee, I'm assuming, Boston, Dunkin'. So, you know, you get a venti for Fenty. Just saying. Possible bit right there. Joe, if you're listening to this right now, venti for Fenty. I think venti's large. I'm not a coffee guy, but I think it's large. And that could be a thing. Just saying. Just saying. But that was awesome. That was really cool talking to him and getting to learn a little bit about the inner workings of the stuff he comes up with, be it his content, viral videos, or the, you know, stand-up bits that he does, all of that. So really cool talking to him and really cool guy. Be sure to follow him on all the social media. Like you just said, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, I think he's on. And check out some of his stuff because it's a good time. So, all right, we will be back to wrap this thing up burrito style. And that'll be the end of episode 73. Fucking killed it. Let's go. All right, everybody. And we're back. We're back to wrap up episode 73 of Feel Good Friday. That was a great interview with Joe Fenty. Very appreciative, again, that he took the time to do that. Means a lot. So thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. I hope, you know, you listen to this episode and aren't too ashamed when you hear my intro and this upcoming outro, because I'm a bit of a moron, but I'm able to put it all together when I'm actually talking to someone. So you may have not seen it while we were having our conversation, but give this a listen and be like, oh fuck, he was dumb the whole time. Wow. It's like some M. Night Shyamalan plot twist shit. Anyway, speaking of movies, M. Night Shyamalan, he directed movies. Sixth Sense, Signs, The Village, all that stuff. It's a big weekend for movies. Big weekend. Barbie versus Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer. I'm actually not sure. I've heard both pronunciations, and I haven't corrected any person that has said them. I'm like, all right, you know what? You're right. Whatever it is, it's all you, buddy. Some call it Barbenheimer. Some call it Oppenarby. Oppenarby. There we go. Now, it's kind of comical because they are both two opposite movies, like entirely. Barbie is Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling and Will Ferrell. And it's this very bright, vibrant, neon, in-your-fucking-face movie. It apparently is not for kids. That's what people are saying. I'm like, well, it's PG-13, so it's not like it's that bad, but still. Apparently, one girl was saying it's really sad. I'm like, eh. Well, do you know what Oppenheimer's about? Because, yeah, Oppenheimer, that's about the old the old nuke we dropped in Japan. There's a bunch of memes going around about how, you know, Barbie was originally released in Japan. And then it's like Oppenheimer. And it's just a blank picture of Cillian Murphy. Which I believe it's Cillian Murphy. It might be Killian Murphy. Killian Murphy would be a lot cool. I've actually never heard his name pronounced. I've never seen like an interview where they're like, all right, we're sitting here with Cillian Murphy. Or is it Killian Murphy? I'm sorry. I'm not sure. Yeah. So either way, that guy, super cool guy, Peaky Blinders, Red Eye, Batman, all that. He played the Scarecrow. He was great. Batman Begins, underrated, by the way. But that was another Christopher Nolan movie. Anyway, so it was this big weekend. It was like, are you Team Barbie or are you Team Oppenheimer? It was a showdown, and it was industry revitalizing. That's what they're saying, because it broke some records. Barbie beat out Oppenheimer. Makes sense. You're going to have more families bringing their kids to see Barbie than Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer is not exactly, you know, a family flick, especially because it's R-rated. It came in second to Barbie with $80.5 million, which is impressive for an R-rated film. But also, it was supposed to be this huge, huge deal. So I was a bit underwhelmed when I heard that it got 80.5, because Barbie opened up with $155 million in the U.S. and Canada. U.S. and Canada. So it was a bit of a landslide. It beat out Oppenheimer by a bunch. It was the biggest launch. That's what they call it when it's opening weekend. The biggest launch of the year. Beat out the Super Mario movie. Super Mario was at 146, like 0.4 million. Barbie, it's wow. It was the highest grossing weekend since the beginning of the pandemic in early 2020, which I don't even know. Early 2020 is like, is the pandemic really happening? I remember March, it really kicked in because I was at my buddy Matt Lukin's St. Patrick's Day party and we were at the bar and everyone was talking about the pandemic. And it didn't seem real. And then a couple days later, the shutdown happened. I was like, oh, fuck, this is real. So, yeah. So it's been a while since two films, grossed this much. And it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome because I'm a fan of going to the movies. I'm a fan of movie theaters. I have a lot of great memories at movie theaters. I'm going to see Insidious, the fifth one. And, I love all movies, but horror movies and action movies in theaters, so cool. Really cool. So I'm pumped to see that. I want to see Talk to Me, getting a lot of good reviews about that as well. But Barbenheimer is the story of the theater right now because people are saying it could save the movie theater. And it might, movie theaters they're not back totally, but, they're getting there, and this is really going to help out, especially the way Christopher Nolan shot Oppenheimer, the 70mm IMAX shit. Like, people want to go to experience that, so it's really cool. I'm really happy. To be honest, I have no particular interest in either of these movies. I will watch both of them for sure once they're out on streaming. I'm not going to go see it in theater. Christopher Nolan's movies are great. Obviously, the Dark Knight series is really awesome. Interstellar's fine. Tenet was something else. But they're just... Dunkirk. Super dramatic. And it's a little much for me. When I watch a movie, and I know as a horror movie fan, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? But I like to be at ease. And horror movies do that for me. But like, I feel like Oppenheimer, I'm going to be edge of my seat. Which is fun, don't get me wrong. But I don't know. I'll wait. Like I said, I'm not like, these movies are going to suck. No, I'm sure they're going to be great movies. I'm just going to wait on them because I'm not eager to see any of them. I'd rather see Insidious. I would rather see Talk to Me. I'd rather see The Haunted Mansion. Everyone's talking about Barbenheimer. No one's talking about The Haunted Mansion and Talk to Me coming out this Friday. That's the real weekend right there, baby. But Barbenheimer, takes all. Understandably, those are two big blockbusters, and I get it. The Barbie trend is huge. I've seen girls in Trader Joe's with the neon pink dresses. I'm like, you went to go see Oppenheimer?
No.
That was my impression of a girl in a neon pink dress. Anyway, all right. Well, this has been fun. Tons of fun. That was my nickname. Joe, tons of fun. Old tons of fun. And, that was Shorzy if you heard that little snore. I'm really happy I got Joe Fenty on the podcast. Venti for Fenty, hashtag. No? All right. We'll workshop it. We'll get it going. But this was a good episode. I like it. I think I got a couple more interviews coming up, a couple other comedians, and I'm pushing for Scrizzly Adams. He's a musical artist that I discovered. He's been out, but I just started listening to him recently, and I fucking love him. He's great. He's got this really great voice, and just the rhythm, and it's all around awesome. So hopefully I can get him on. We'll see. I'm gonna do my best because you all deserve my best. Thank you. All right, people. Y'all have a good weekend. Go see Barbie, go see Oppenheimer, whatever you want. Go see Insidious if you want, if you want to be like really cool like me. And God, what? 73 episodes. I still haven't perfected the fucking sign off. I'm out of here.